Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for Autumn Semester 2022.
Today, perpetuities and non-level cash flow annuity. Before we do that, we have our usual look at the markets. And this was quite an interesting day as we came toward the end of it. And At one point, I was taking a bear position. I was down close to $800. And then suddenly, the bottom just dropped out at the end. And from down 800 to up almost 1,000 that fast, that's what can happen. And it was just a plunge off the deep end. And as you can see, all three of those, the NASDAQ, the Dow 30, and the S&P 500, all dropped about the same amount. This was an across-the-board killing spree, and it was the markets were waiting for something to give them a direction, and I haven't even checked to see. It looks like the Fed did a rate increase of an actual full percentage point. That's what I'm thinking happened. Let me just quickly see. Apparently Yahoo Finance isn't, there's nothing there in those news stories that would explain that. Something dramatic would have dropped that market that fast, that hard. So going over here and having a quick look, crude it was down for the day. It's in that trading range from 82 to 89. As I had told you, you can see that it just wants to stay in that range. And it's going to mean that gasoline prices have gone down. And I actually anticipate that they'll ease up a little more as more of this gasoline gets into the pipeline and shows up at the gas pumps. We'll see it maybe even get down to $3.40, $3.49 a gallon here in the next week or so, unless something really dramatic happens. And dramatic, I would mean that Eastern Europe is still a spooky place right now, and Uncle Vlad is on a tear to try to keep from getting assassinated, so he's probably going to try something pretty radical here eventually. Gold and silver. It's interesting. Notice that they followed the same pattern. Silver was much more reactive today. Do you see how gold, see those spikes? Both of them had that dip and then that spike. And so I'm not sure what that was about, but they were definitely both on a roll today. But over here, the bonds, yield went down, price went up. That is classically what happened. Do you see at the end how there was a sell-off of stocks? Well, that money's got to go someplace. Where did it go? That's a classic flight to quality. It went over to bonds. Yields went down. That means the prices went up. So the money flowed out of equities in those last few minutes, and then it went into bonds, and it flowed right over to bonds. So, I mean, there was clearly something spooked the markets, because that's a classic flight to quality. Moving from riskier investments to safer investments. Moving from stocks to bonds. And so you see it right there. Yields dropped on the bonds. That's the price going up. And then Tokyo was just in a sour mood. Something got it irritated right at the beginning, and then it just kind of floated down there in bad territory all day. By the time the sun went up over in London, there was kind of a good mood over there. You could see it surged, and then it kind of waved, but it came back there at the end. And here, when the markets opened, they opened very strong. There was a good upswing. And I mean, in the last class, it was still in the positive territory, looking good. And just in a blink of an eye, something just scared the crap out of the markets, and the bottom dropped out of them. And that was good for me, because I'd been getting killed all day by the bullish sentiment, but there at the end, it was very bearish. Now, one of the things that does happen in a class like this is that I do tend to take bearish positions, and I talked to you about bear markets. But I also recognize that I should give equal time to the other side when we're talking about these kinds of markets. I have to be able to allow for you to know that bulls have a very good argument for what they do and who they are. And so I did have the opportunity to get a guest speaker here who a bullish investor, and he wanted to speak to you for a few minutes about the benefits of bullish sentiments and all of that. Now remember, when I say there's no such thing as a bear market, you come in and you tap me on the shoulder and you growl and chase me behind the podium. Hi, I'm a bull, and I believe in bull markets. I am a bull, and I think that there is going to be a bull market for the rest of your lives. There is no reason for you to take any bearish positions whatsoever, because bulls are in charge. You will make money being a bull. There is no such thing as a bear. There is no such thing as a bear market. There never has been. And so, when I tell you that, perpetuities. Shut up. A perpetuity is an annuity that is infinite in length. It goes on forever. There is no end to it. Now, this sounds like something that is unrealistic, but actually there are quite realistic examples of it all over the place in business. One classic example is in business theory. A corporation is a going concern. There is no limit to how long it can live. In other words, yes, corporations do die, but they do not have a mortality clock on them. And so, essentially, the stream of dividends would be a perpetuity. It should go on forever, at least in theory. And that is one of our bases for pricing, finding the intrinsic price of a security, is by saying, okay, it is a perpetuity. We can price it by the perpetuity formula. I'll give you some other examples here. One of them comes from the 1800s. Ever since the Middle Ages, kings of different countries would like to have fights with each other, wars, skirmishes, full-blown wars. One of them actually, some people call it World War Zero, lasted for close to 100 years in the late Middle Ages. But in the 1800s, Napoleon Bonaparte wanted to have one of his wars. Now, one of the things about it is that a lot of times, these kings and queens, the sovereign, the royalty, doesn't have a lot of money. They have their jewels and their lifestyles, but they don't have huge capital. And so even in the Middle Ages, kings would borrow money from wealthy people, wealthy families, wealthy structures. Like in the Middle Ages, the English kings borrowed from the guild, the Biermeisters, the beer guilds. But anyway, Napoleon wanted to have a war, and he didn't have the money, so he went to this family and said, I need so and so many million francs so I can have this war. And the family, being quite astute financially, said, oh, yeah, okay. And Napoleon said, well, I can pay you back 20 years, you know, interest and all that. He said, no. I'll tell you what. You never have to pay us back. All you have to do is pay the interest on what you borrow forever. And this sounded like the deal of a lifetime to someone like Napoleon. I don't have to ever pay you the principal back. Oh, no, just the interest. That's a perpetuity. Just a level perpetuity. And funniest thing is that that got to be kind of an issue after 100, 150 years. As a matter of fact, the French government, maybe a decade ago or something like that, actually petitioned a court to cancel the debt because they were so sick of writing this check every year forever. They said, cancel it. It can't. Yeah. The court said, oh, no, that's a valid debt. You're stuck forever paying this. That's it. So affirming that it really was a perpetuity. Now, there are other examples of perpetuities as well. One of them is quite very realistic, and it's how we find the intrinsic price of a certain type of stock. Now, whenever I talk about stock, whenever you hear about stocks, almost always they are referring to common stock. You put your money in, you make money off dividends, and the price increases if there are going to be any of either. That's a common stock. They vote for the board of directors of the corporation, which runs the corporation, and all of that. They can get a dividend. They don't have to get a dividend. Now, there's another kind of stock called preferred stock, and I have mentioned it. Preferred stock is equity, so it has residual claim, but it has a claim prior to the common stock. Preferred stock works like this. I'll give you an example. CLB, 1.5% cumulative preferred par value, $40 per share. Now, here's what that means. Preferred stock, you will get a dividend every year forever of 1.5% of the par value. So every year for every share forever, you will get 60 cents. Forever. Now, if the company doesn't pay that dividend, it doesn't have to, but if it doesn't, the common stock cannot get a dividend. Another thing is, this is even more restrictive, it's cumulative. So if the company doesn't pay a dividend, let's say for a couple of years, it has to make up all of those dividends and the current dividend before the common shareholders can get a dividend. It is a kind of like a meat axe. It used to be quite popular. As a matter of fact, you look on the financial statements of a lot of older corporations, you'll see a listing for the preferred stock outstanding. It's lost its luster in recent years. Every time I'm going to do this class, I tear through looking for quotes on preferred stock. They're hard to find because it is so unusual anymore. Something that used to be popular for companies. Now, excuse me, when I look through, it looks like the companies that issue preferred, or there's preferred that I can find a listing for, are oftentimes real estate companies, a kind called a REIT, REIT, Real Estate Investment Trust. outside of those, it's really hard to find quotes for these things. Now, think about it. This used to be a very popular investment because let's say you got an older couple comes in. We've got $10 million. We want to put it someplace so that we get a fixed income off it. Well, obviously, bonds could do that. You get your interest every year. But perpetuity, it's just going to keep going. So you could, an older couple could collect their perpetuity every year for the rest of their lives and then bequeath it as a permanent benefit to their heirs. So it has its benefits, but companies just don't like it because of the Napoleon effect. They don't want to be on the hook forever for something like this. It's like a permanent leech attached. Now, what I have seen in a couple of cases recently was a twist on the preferred, where they issued the preferred, investors bought it, but the company had the right, after a certain number of years, to convert it into common stock. So it was a convertible preferred. I do see that sometimes. So that's not really a true preferred in the perpetuity sense. Now, there are two flavors of perpetuities, two different flavors of perpetuities. One is the level perpetuity. This is one that has the same amount every year forever. That's a preferred stock. That's a level perpetuity. That Napoleon era bond was a level. Now, the present value of these is simply the dividend divided by what the market says the risk of the security is. The discount rate. That's all you do. And then you get you get it. Let me show you. For CLB, try a couple of different risk levels for CLB. And what the price of the stock would be. Let's say that the market says, well, really 1.4% is enough of a discount rate. You're paying more than that, but that's enough that for us. So the price would be the 60-cent dividend divided by 0.014. Nothing tough about that. So we do 0.60 divided by 0.014, $42.86. That's its intrinsic value right now.
What was that?
Where those pop-ups are driving me crazy. Idiots. Okay, $42.86. Now notice that is a slight premium to par of the stock. Why? Because the market says that 1.5% is too generous. So investors buy it and push the price up. Now let's say that the discount rate was instead 1.6%. In that case, the price of the preferred would be the 60 cents divided by 0.016. And that should be a nice round number, 0.6 divided by 0.016, $37.50. Selling at a little discount to par. It's not paying as much as what the market says would be commensurate with the risk. Nothing hard there. Okay, so finally, suppose that the market says it's dead on to what it should pay. In that case, it will sell, not surprisingly, 0.60 divided by 0.015, dead on at par. It should pay 1.5%, the market says. It does pay 1.5%, so it's going to sell right at par. Notice something this is an underlying fundamental principle. I've already talked about it, keep saying it. But you see this, how as the discount rate goes up, the price goes down. Price and discount rate are inversely related. That is a universal principle, and it comes from mathematics, not from finance, but it drives our finance. Price and yield are inversely related in every case, all through finance. But anyway, this is the basis of a level perpetuity, and there are a lot of those out there. There was an advertisement years ago that went something like, if you put $50 in the bank every week for 20 years, you can take $50 a week out forever. That was sort of a twist on the calculation of a perpetuity. But anyway, now, a background story for the next part is, from my background years in consulting, it happened several times, and one was just kind of vivid in my mind right now, was there was a board of directors meeting of a company. It had been around for about 6 years, and they had made a profit in the last 2 years. They were on their world. They were on their feet, and they were on their way. But the board meeting, the president / CEO asked the question. He said, is it time for us to pay a dividend to our shareholders? You know, a signal. Look, we're doing well enough. We can disgorge some of our earnings. They belong to you, so we're going to give some of it back to you and plow the rest back into the company. And he said, is it time for us to do that? And my advice was, okay, two things. One is, yes, a dividend is going to make the shareholders happy. It's also going to get the attention of Wall Street, which we hadn't been able to get. If we declare a dividend, that's going to get at least a few fund managers to kind of look and maybe buy maybe a few hundred thousand shares or something like that. So yes, that's a great idea. But two things. One is, if you pay a dividend and then next year we don't have the money to do it, that's going to piss the investors off, because it's going to look like you led them on. So once you start doing this, you probably want to make sure that you can keep doing it after that. So make sure that we've got stable, you know, our profits are good, or at least we have retained earnings so that we can pull out and pay a dividend if we're not doing so well, just to keep the investors happy. The other thing is that as a corporation matures, something else needs to happen eventually. Not only does it need to pay a dividend, it needs to stabilize the dividend and then to give it a constant rate of growth thereafter. If they can do that, then Wall Street really pays attention, because we have a very straightforward formula for finding intrinsic price. If it is a constant growth perpetuity of dividend. So that in practice, I had been preaching this, talking about this for a long, long time. A few years back, I went to some older companies, mature, and I started looking at their growth rate of their dividends for the last, let's say, 5-10 years. Sure enough, if once the company was at beyond a certain age, every year the dividend was growing by about the same amount, year over year. So it's not just a suggestion or a theory. You see companies actually doing this. I think one of them that I looked at that was a little more recent was Target Corporation. Eventually, their dividends were very unstable. As a matter of fact, there were a few years when they didn't pay a dividend. You know, that happens. But there was eventually a time when they stabilized their dividends, and then after that, they've been on a constant growth path. If we can get a company to do that, the company loses some of its risk to investors. Risk goes down, discount rate goes down, price of the stock goes up. It's like a lockstep procedure. It's part of corporate understanding that this is something that is desirable that eventually we want to do. If a company isn't paying a dividend, I mean, my God, how we figure out the intrinsic value of the stock is a thing to behold. But if a company is stable, mature dividend, we have a constant growth perpetuity formula. Now, I'm going to caution you. The present value is going to be the dividend one period out divided by the discount rate minus the growth rate. That's the caution. D1 is the current dividend times 1 plus the growth rate. In other words, 1 year lookout. Now, here's the warning I give you on a quiz or an exam. If I say they just paid a dividend, you need to grow it 1 year. If I say they anticipate or they will pay a dividend in 1 year of, I've already given you the D1. Look carefully at which I say. They just paid a dividend of a dollar. That means you need to grow it by the growth rate to the next period. If I say the company expects to pay a dividend next year of $2.05, then I have already given you the D1 and you don't have to do this calculation right here. ASM has just paid a dividend of $1.25 per share. And is expected to have a growth rate of dividends thereafter of 2.0% per year. If the dividends are discounted at 7.8%, what is the current price of ASM Common? And I'll read that again for those of you in the back. ASM has just paid a dividend of $1.25 per share and is expected to have a growth rate of dividends thereafter of 2.0% per year. If the dividends are discounted at 7.8%, what is the current price of ASM Common? Now, here's the thing. In this case, I have given you D0. D0 is $1.25. So D1, the one that you use in the formula, is grown one period. $1.25 times 1 plus 0.02. Now, if I told you they expect to pay a dividend of $1.25 next year, you've already got the D1. You don't have to do that. And it goes both ways. I show it to you both ways because it actually shows up in real practice both ways. Now, the R sub S is obviously the 8.7%, or I'm sorry, 7.8%. 7.8%. And the growth rate is 2%. So the price right now of ASM Common would be $1.25 times 1 plus 0.02 divided by 0.078 minus 0.02. I caution you, and I do this, I'm famous for making this mistake. Don't forget to trap that denominator in parentheses when you do the calculation. But here you go. I'm going to take 1.25 times the growth rate, 1 plus 0.02, divided by open parenthesis, 0.078, minus 0.02. And there's your intrinsic price per share of the stock, $21.98. And again, I will emphasize that this ability to calculate rapidly and easily an intrinsic value makes a company's stock safer for investment purposes. That's why lower risk, higher expected return. Lower risk, higher price. Lower risk, lower discount rate, higher price. So that's why companies do go toward this. And like I said, companies that are in their early phases, one of the reasons they're so damn risky is because we don't have an easy model, a straightforward model for finding what the intrinsic price of the stock is. So in a case like this with ASM, it will be an investor's love child. On the other hand, companies that don't price, that don't have dividends, well, they're risky. Well, look at Tesla. It doesn't pay a dividend. Look at its beta. What was it, 2 point something? Amazon. I mean, that's a huge company, but they don't pay a dividend, and that's why their beta is so far above one. We don't have a model that's easy to follow. In fact, to price those, oftentimes what we do is the stuff that I teach in one of the terminal courses here in finance. I would teach it at the MBA level. It's a derivatives course, and the math is just hellacious. And it's also dodgy. Getting the dividends out there makes the company safer. Just like once you have a stable growth of, you have an income, you know what it's going to be from month to month, and then you know that you're going to get raises every year, you're going to be surprised at how your behavior changes. You don't have the defensive risk positions that you would have had otherwise. So that's what this is all about, is with these getting there. Now, there is a twist on this formula that I'll show you in a couple of weeks. When you have a stock that's going to have an unstable dividend for maybe the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, but then we expect the dividend to stabilize. It's a younger company. It's paying dividends. Maybe it misses a dividend 1 year, pays a nice dividend another year. But then there's a place where what we call the horizon, where the company stabilizes. And we can get the intrinsic price right out there at the horizon by this formula. Then take its present value back to now, along with those unstable dividends, their present value, and we can get the price of a stock that way too. So oftentimes, one of our questions as analysts, when we talk to corporate officials, when do you expect your dividends to stabilize? We'll be blunt about it. You know, give us a time frame for this. 5 years, 7 years, when is it? And so that way we can get a handle, at least a handle on how to price the security, intrinsic value now. By its unstable dividends, their present value, plus the present value of that horizon value once the company is stabilized to that formula. That's down the road a little bit though, but you get the hang of it now. Now, a couple of side notes here. I'm going to take you back and show you some stupid pet tricks with plain old the annuities, loans, and all that. It'll save you some grief, formula grief, if I show you these. The first thing I'm going to say, let's do a loan. Apps, Finance, TVM, Solver. Let's say you take out a 30-year loan times 12 payments a month. Remember, N is times the number of compounding. And the APR on the loan is 5.69%. This time you'll divide by 12 because it's recalculated after every one of your monthly payments. Okay, now the present value, Let's say you go for a house that's $150,000. Now, everything else, leave your FV11 and your payments on end. It's an ordinary annuity. And we'll just get the payment. This is what I showed you last few classes. Alpha Sol. Your payments are going to be $869.65 a month. No big thing. That's all there is to it. So now, I'm going to quit, second quit. Excuse me. And I'm going to say, that those numbers are still in there in the memory of the TI. So let's ask a few questions. First of all, let's try an obvious one. What's going to be the balance on that loan? How much do you still owe after, let's say, 15 years, halfway through the loan? Well, we have an app for that. Apps, Finance. You go down here to BAL, BAL, and you hit Enter. Now, the only thing you have to remember is that I gave those numbers in months. So its memory is in months. So I have to say 15 years times 12 months. You don't hit enter or anything like that. Just say 15 times 12, close the parentheses, and hit enter. I still owe $105,131.72. That fast. Guarantee you that if you did this on a calculator or with a formula, it would take you a while longer. And if you're like me, you're going to make mistakes, arithmetic mistakes, and get the wrong answer anyway. This way you get the balance on it. Let's try another question. How much interest did I pay over those first 15 years of the loan? Fair question. Well, your payments, part's interest, part goes to the principal. So here we go, apps, finance. Now you go down here, it's a ways down, but there, see that sigma or sum of interest? Hit that one. Now you're going to have to do two things. The first thing you're going to have to do is you're going to have to tell it when you want to begin the calculation, month one. Now when you put in a comma in a TI, that tells the TI, here comes something not different. Now the next thing you're going to do is say, when do you want to find out when it's the end? In this case, it'd be 15 times 12, and we close the parentheses, and we hit enter. Jeez, you've paid $111,668.77 over the first half of the life of the loan, over the first 15 years of the loan. That's kind of a whopping amount of interest, but you know, there you are. Over the first 180 months of the loan, that's how much you paid in interest. Now this can be actually a useful calculation. You know your interest is tax deductible. I could say, okay, what is Apps Finance TVM Solver? No, sorry. Apps, Finance, go down here to that sum of interest. And I could say, how about from month 179, I'm sorry, 169 to 180. That would be the 15th year of the loan. $6,116.28. That's how much you could is tax deduction. In other words, that would be minus that amount from your taxable income. So you can actually go year by year and see what your tax deduction will be for your mortgage payments. That's useful to know. And now one more. Okay, what's the balance on this? How much did I pay in principal over the first 15 years? Apps, Finance, drill down to balance, or to sum of principle, sigma PRN. Okay, from month 1 to month 15 times 12, I've paid $44,868.28. So $150,000 loan, the first half of the loan, you paid only $44,868 of the balance down. It's rather disturbing, isn't it? Want to see what is really depressing? Apps, finance, how much did I pay over the first 12 months of the loan? From month 1 through month 12. $1,951 of the principal in the first year of the loan. So in other words, that's about, what was that? About 2 of the payments went to principal. That's why it's so dangerous in the early years of a loan. Because if housing prices drop, you're upside down because you've paid so little on the principal that, you know, the house value has dropped more than you've paid on it. So, you know, that gives you an idea that your risk is at the front end of a loan. But anyway, this is a nice little thing. Last thing I'm going to tell you about is, there's 2 more things. This one requires that I take you back to history a little bit here. The 1920s, and I've talked about this before, the Roaring Twenties, it was a time of 3 consecutive presidents who were free marketers. Best government is no government. Regulation is bad, trickle-down economics works, the rich got richer and the poor got poorer. But it wasn't just the poor, it was the working class. And even the upper middle class was getting screwed, and it was getting worse and worse as the 1920s went on, because all kinds of scams, schemes, lies, fake deals were just everywhere, and there was no enforcement framework. Hell, in some cases, there wasn't even a law against some of the things that they were doing. And if there was, there was no prosecutor who was going to go after these people. I mean, it was just a ridiculous time. I'll give you an example. Madam, I would like to have you invest $25,000. And in 1 year, I will pay you back $50,000. That's a 100% return on your money. And I guarantee it, it's not guarantee, it's guarantee that you will get it. It seems too good to believe, but you better believe it because I will come through with your money, I promise you that. Well, of course, I take the $25,000 and I spend it. I'm not stupid, I'm going to enjoy myself. So I come to you, madam, in a year, one last day, and I say, I've got the deal of the century for you. You lend me $200,000, and I will turn that into $800,000 in 1 year. That is 400% return, and you better believe that I can do it because I've done it before. Thank you very much for your money, and have a good day. So I pay you back your $50,000, and I enjoy the other $350,000. I enjoy the other $150,000. So in a year, I just simply come to you, sir, and I say, sir, I would like to borrow from you $5 million. And you can ask her, I'm good for it. You got paid back. Okay, well, okay, $10 million. You lend me, okay, I'll tell you what, you lend me $8 million. And I'll pay you back $100 million. I promise you. And so you lend it to me and I pay her back and I've got all this cred because I'm paying people back. So at this point, I just sort of make myself very scarce in the United States, and I just go away. You sorry son of a bitch, you should have known better. You understand though? Yes, this was done over and over and over again. It had been, this kind of scam had been going on since the 1870s, and it picked up speed, and all kinds of different con games were going on. And finally, of course, an economy cannot survive doing that, and the economy began to buckle. In 1929, the stock market crashed. And then from there, it just got worse and worse. And that's when they put in reformers, said, enough of this. And they clamped down. They made an interest rate that no one could go above 5.25% in savings. Eventually, banks figured out a way around it. It's called compounding. If you compound 5.25% more than once a year, it becomes an effective rate higher. Apps, finance, and you've got a button down here, EFF. If I compound 5.25% twice a year, it effectively becomes 5.32%. If I compound it quarterly, it becomes 5.35%. Monthly, it becomes 5.38%. Effective rate is no smaller. It is greater than or equal to the APR. It's only equal to the APR if there's one compounding a year. So in other words, when you take out a monthly loan, that 5.6%, 5.69%, those were monthly payments. That is effectively 5.84%. So if I ask you on a test, here's your loan, find me the payment. You can do that in a matter of 10 seconds. If I then say, what's the balance after so many years? You can do that in another 10 seconds. I can say, okay, how much principal interest have you paid? You can tell me that. And I say, what's the effective rate on the loan? You can get that. That's four of the top level hardest questions in a matter of maybe a half a minute on one of my quizzes or exams. I guarantee you I will do this. And it won't be any more complicated than what I'm giving you here. So just call me the Candy Man, because I've telegraphed my punch. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.